mornings. I'm Chris Oaks, and coming up today, now that the probate and juvenile court has moved into the new downtown judicial center, Hancock County commissioners must tackle the question of what to do with the historic building that formerly served as the court's home. Also this morning, with a budget of nearly $10 million, the Hancock County Board of Developmental Disabilities supports the success and well-being of hundreds of vulnerable individuals in the community. We'll discuss highlights from their latest annual report. And happening around town, we have details on the upcoming Hancock Sports Hall of Fame golf outing to support the continued recognition of our area's superior athletes and their inspiring stories. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, May 7th, 2025. Election results from yesterday. The Findlay City Schools levy did pass. So a lot of folks are watching that. And in the city council races, we had some interesting results. Heather Kinzinger, L. Reed Needles, and Brad Wagner, the top three vote getters from the at-large contest. Now, there will be an election in the fall because there is one Democrat seeking an at-large seat on council. So that means there will be four candidates in November for the three seats that are open. But in the Republican primary, it was Kinzinger, Needles, and Wagner, the top three vote getters. In the first ward for city council, a very close race between Nicole Coleman and Holly Frischi. Nicole Coleman comes out on top by about 1% of the vote. B.J. Preston defeated Michael Gentry in the second ward. Carol Smith over Patricia Klein in the third ward. Daniel DeArmond was unopposed in the fourth ward. Brian Ballman defeated Kimberly Meter in the fifth ward. Rodney Phillips over Haiti Sadler with a pretty decisive win, 64% in the sixth ward. And in the seventh ward, Danny DeLong defeated Brody Yingling. So, again, some of those may be one or more. Those could be opposed with in the November election, the possibility of a write-in candidate. That deadline to file as a write-in doesn't happen for several weeks yet. But those were the city council election results from last night as well. So, conclave underway. And bookmakers say the odds-on favorite to be the next pope. It's a close race between two cardinals since the passing of Pope Francis. Betting platforms around the world have been putting odds on who will be his likely successor. Now, I don't know how many of them are actually taking wagers on the next pope, but they are putting out odds for the vote. In the lead, currently, is Cardinal Pietro Parolin, 70-year-old Vatican diplomat and the Pope's Secretary of State, Francis's Secretary of State. Close second is 67-year-old Filipino Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle, who has been called the Asian Francis because of his commitment to social justice. It's kind of interesting. There is no deadline on the conclave. This could go on for hours. It could go on for months. I think the longest conclave lasted several years, but that was many centuries ago. No conclave has gone for more than 5 days in the past century. So, the past 100 years, it's been 5 days or less. So that's, I guess, kind of the benchmark that we were expecting. We'll see how that goes. That now underway. That'll be a big story over the next several days, to be sure. We mentioned the Findlay City Schools levy passed, and maybe this is a way to celebrate. It is a national observance promoting active transportation and traffic safety taking place today. National Walk, Bike, Roll to School Day, where students are encouraged to start their day with physical activity, walking to school, biking to school, or rolling to school, skates or skateboards or whatever. At the same time, they are raising awareness about safe routes to school for pedestrians and bicyclists. And I also should point this out, should you run into any issues with biking or walking or rolling to school, it is also National School Nurse Day today, so that's rather appropriate. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started. I'm not sure what to make of this story. This jumped out at me on the Newswire this morning, one of the first things that I saw. A new study suggests that people with mental disorders are more likely to be left-handed. Wait a minute, I'm left-handed. Now, I want to make sure that I clarify here. It says people with mental disorders are more likely to be left-handed. It does not necessarily say that people who are left-handed are more likely to have mental disorders. This is research out of Germany. They compared data of over 200,000 individuals and found those with schizophrenia, autism, and other neurodevelopmental disorders show higher rates of left-handedness compared to the general population. Study is published in the journal Psychological Bulletin. Shows that hand preferences often begin even before birth, with prenatal thumb sucking at as early as 10 weeks of pregnancy being a good indicator of hand preference later in life. That's interesting research for all of us lefties out there. Make of it what you will. I don't know if you remember hearing about this story. I remember vaguely remember talking about this a couple of years ago. An effort to combat mosquitoes in Southern California. The city of L.A., back in 2023, started to release sterile male mosquitoes into the mosquito population. The idea being that when the males mate with the female mosquitoes, the eggs would not be viable and would not hatch. Apparently, it is working. So far, the pilot program reports an 82% reduction in the number of mosquitoes in SoCal. The West Valley Mosquito and Vector Control District, because in L.A. and Southern California, you have to have an entire agency dedicated to mosquito control. The West Valley Mosquito and Vector Control District has noted that this is the first time in 8 years that the mosquito population has gone down instead of up, and there were fewer calls complaining about the pests. So, apparently, it is working. Just a follow-up to that story. I remember talking about that story, and I remember thinking, why release the sterile males, just destroy them? And you've got the same thing, and you have a lot fewer mosquitoes out there to begin with. But anyway, it is apparently working. Mother's Day coming up this weekend. This is something kind of interesting. There are fewer moms, apparently, out there. Many parents rethinking whether or not to have children, and if they do, the number of children that they can afford due to rising costs associated with child rearing. This is a recent survey commissioned by LendingTree. 77% of those in this survey said raising children has been more expensive than they expected, and 46% of parents with young children say that they have fewer kids than they had initially planned on having because of financial constraints. We talk about the declining U.S. population, and it's been in the news. The president wants to give a financial incentive to people to have more babies, maybe just lower costs of raising a child. LendingTree says the cost of raising a child is nearly $300,000. That's from birth to age 18. $300,000. That is up 36% over just the past 2 years. Whew, man, I'm glad I don't have any kids that age. I'm glad we had our kids when it was still relatively cheap to do so, I guess. But man, that is an amazing number. Just jaw-dropping. $300,000, up 36% over the past 2 years. And the president says they want to offer, a $5,000 stipend or bonus for people who have kids. I don't think $5,000, you're going to have to go a lot higher than $5,000. It costs $300,000 to raise a kid. You're going to have to give me more than $5,000. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, topping the latest list as the best city to escape a zombie apocalypse. Fort Worth, Texas, which gets high marks for its road conditions, plenty of gas stations, and light traffic. Although I'm guessing if there was a zombie apocalypse, traffic might be a little heavier. You might see the volume of traffic go up. Let's see here. But they do say that Fort Worth has a somewhat low population density as major cities go. Coming in second is the second best city to escape a zombie apocalypse, San Diego, California, followed by Oklahoma City, Jacksonville, and Phoenix, rounding out the top five. On the other end of the spectrum, the worst places for escaping a zombie apocalypse, Los Angeles, followed by San Francisco, New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia. But let's be honest, of all of those cities, do we really care if any of them were taken over by zombies? Some might argue that they already have been. There you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly cloudy today with a high in the lower 70s, partly cloudy tonight, low around 50. Finley City Schools had a 1% earned income tax levy on the primary ballot on Tuesday, the same measure that voters turned down last November. It was a much different result this time around, however, with unofficial results from the Hancock County Board of Elections showing the levy passed with more than 66% of the vote. Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton says this victory belongs to everyone who envisioned a sustainable future for our schools and worked tirelessly to make it a reality. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you. The district must still move forward with the $6 million in reductions approved for next school year after the levy failure last November. Get more on this and other election results on our website. The Ohio Attorney General has certified the title and language of a proposed referendum for the November ballot that would repeal the Higher Education Act.
It bans diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in state universities and colleges in Ohio. It also prevents faculty from striking and makes it easier to fire tenured teachers. The group pushing for this to be overturned needs 248,000 signatures by June 30th to make the fall ballot, which would then let the voters decide the fate of the act.
ONN's Jay Plyburn reporting. Blanchard Valley Health System says area youth can participate in Grief Trails, a specialized day camp designed to support children and teens who have experienced the loss of a loved one. Grief Trails is sponsored by Bridge Home Health and Hospice, a division of Blanchard Valley Health System, and will take place in July at Challenge Champions Equestrian Center in Ottawa. Learn more about Grief Trails in the story on our website. The University of Findlay will host commencement ceremonies for its 2025 graduates on Saturday in the Kaler Fitness and Recreation Complex. The UF class of 2025 is comprised of 861 students. Following the commencement ceremonies, graduates will participate in UF's long-standing tradition of marching back through the Griffith Memorial Arch. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, now that the probate and juvenile court has moved into the new downtown judicial center, they had the official ribbon cutting and open house this past weekend. Hancock County commissioners now turn their attention to the question of what to do with the historic building that formerly served as the court's home. And Commissioner Jeff Hunker is with us in the studio this morning. I think this is the first time that we've had you into the studio since taking office. So how are things going overall?
Well, first off, Chris, thanks for letting me be here today. Appreciate it. Things are going good. You know, I'm 4 months in. Mm-hmm. You know, what a veteran, right?
Yeah.
You know, but the one thing I will say, my motto, I guess, for this year is it's 2025, the year of moving. at the county.
Yeah.
You're seeing a lot of moving going on. Mm-hmm. You know, we took people out of three buildings and put them in that new building.
Right.
And constant shuffling. And so, yeah.
And that was one of the things when we talked with Tim Bechtel when the court initially moved into the building, that wasn't the only movement. There were going to be an awful lot of agencies kind of moving around as decide who is best to put where.
Right. So right now, you know, we took people out of three buildings. So far, the public defenders have moved into the building that the commissioner's and the prosecutor's office is in, mm-hmm. as well as Scrambler's Restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in there, and as far as we know, they're very happy with their new quarters. We were able to get them out of a leased facility. We're in the process of still, I was hoping it would be done by now, but still trying to buy the ADS property on Olive Street. And moving the Board of Elections and the Veterans Services mm-hmm. and possibly some others we'll see into that building.
Because those are also in
quarters right now,
so
too.
So it makes sense to put them into
county-owned property. And this is all since the flood, mm-hmm. back in the flood. So,
right.
So yeah. You can imagine how long that's been. So I commend my previous group of commissioners. I'm kind of coming on board now with some things that were already in the works,
but I'm
liking what we're seeing and hopeful that good things are going to continue.
So the historic building where the probate and juvenile court is, that is vacant now, is that correct?
Not totally vacant.
Okay.
The one thing that the general public does not know is that we have our maintenance crew, downtown maintenance crew in there, but mm-hmm. otherwise, yes, that building is vacant.
So, this is the big question, and I remember when you were running for this office, this question came up of what to do with that building. It is a historic building, and that has created an awful lot of emotional reaction. But when we posed the question to you and the other candidates for the seat that you now hold, you were very direct at the time, saying that you believe that that building should come down, citing the ongoing cost of maintenance and upkeep and operation, the need for downtown parking and all of that. I know that yesterday the commissioners met with historic preservationists at that building to discuss its future. Have you had a change of heart, any change of mind, anything that they said that would give you second thoughts on that?
Well, you know, as you said, I was pretty straightforward in my comments.
Mm-hmm.
And as of now, I haven't changed my opinion. There has been no decision made on this building at mm-hmm. this time. Mm-hmm. We heard from a group from Heritage Ohio yesterday. And what they really did, which was good, they observed the exterior as well as the interior of the building.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to get back to the commissioners with a report. And, you know, I want to make it well known that, you know, I'm not against historical buildings. I they're beautiful. They have a lot of value. As a county commissioner, my challenge is I have to be fiscally responsible to the taxpayers that send their funds to us,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and be transparent as well. And I guess one thing I'd like to say is this was interesting. Yesterday, they made a comment, kind of a key point here. They said, you need a preservation plan if the building is kept.
Mm-hmm.
As of now, the commissioners have not shared jointly any preservation plan.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have a plan as far as who you would like to occupy that building and things like that.
Well, that was what I was going to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what would that plan entail? Did they give you any kind of guidance as to that plan would
look
like?
It was kind of interesting. One thing that one of the individuals told me was, I did write it down. He said something about a youth services building.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, that would be most likely a joint venture between, you know, public and private or nonprofit, and I don't know. You know, at this point, I don't believe the commissioners have an intention of working with anyone else on that building. I think I truly believe that and we haven't really talked about this. We've had so much going on,
right,
that we haven't had time to talk about this in meetings. I don't know that we, as a public entity, want to get into that area.
Yeah,
but you know, I have had public officials express their opinions to me, what they think should happen in that building. And
a
lot of them would like to see that building tore down.
It's interesting. You say that this is not something that there have been a whole lot of formal conversations everything. And it's to be expected.
Right.
I mean, again, the priority is getting everybody squared away in
right.
you know, the locations that they are moving to and so on. From the probate court all the way down to veteran services, and everybody else is moving.
Right.
So obviously that's the priority. But is there a timeline for making a decision? I mean, obviously you don't want to let it just sit.
Well, my timeline personally is, you know, we have to address our first issue before we address this bigger issue. And in my eyes, the big issue is if we displace our maintenance crew that works out of part of that building,
right,
we have to find a place for them,
right,
and as you may know, or the public may know and may not know, we have, I believe, four buildings downtown, I believe, and four buildings out on County Road 140. So we've kind of got a separate maintenance, two separate maintenance crews, and you have to make a decision where you're going to house these individuals. It's significantly beneficial if you have part of your crew downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And then part of them out on County Road 140 as well, which we currently have.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see that continue. The challenge right now is having the space for them if that building was not to be in the picture.
So is there the possibility that the county could offload that that structure to some other interested party, knowing that
right.
it is in a rather challenging place to use for, I mean, where it is located, Dorney Plaza, there next to the municipal building, it's not something where you're going to have a business move in, more than likely,
right.
or something like that. So there, it does present some challenges in terms of what can it be used for moving forward.
I mean, it is a possibility. You know, obviously yesterday, at the beginning of the meeting, it was presented in three different ways. You could save all of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Or part of the building.
Mm-hmm.
You could tear down all the building or part of the building.
Part of the building, yeah.
Or you could move the building. Well, you know, that's another option, but who knows what that would cost either. You know,
that seems like that would be rather pricey.
Right. But I really don't know. You know, as with anything, when there's a vote that comes up, you may not always agree.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to see how this goes. I don't know. I don't know about. As a group, at least, we do not have a plan of who would occupy this building.
Yeah.
If it was a stand, and I know parking is a huge concern. Downtown.
Right. And it is very. It is a valid point that you can't save everything
right.
that is historic for one reason or another. If you saved everything
correct.
That was historic, then you would have no room for
right.
building new anything eventually. But obviously, again, this becomes a very emotional thing for many in the community, given the age, given the history of the building.
And I'm respectful of that. I really am. I understand. I think there's... Today, with the way buildings are built, you don't have the beautiful buildings like
right.
you used to have.
Yeah.
The challenge of it is maintaining those
right.
buildings and maintenance costs. We already have two very old structures.
Mm-hmm.
We have the courthouse
right.
and we have the old county home on County Road 140, which is offices to some entities out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, the challenge with me is how many old buildings can you have?
Yeah.
New buildings also have their challenges.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly what all the expenses will be on the new building next door.
Fair point as well. You mentioned that the Preservation Committee, the Historic Ohio, will be getting back with a report. Yes. Did they give you any indication as to when that might be?
If they did, I did not catch any time, but I anticipate it won't be too long.
Okay. So, again, much more to come on this as those decisions are looming. Probably sooner rather than later, but again, as you mentioned, there are a lot of other things that have to be in place first. Again, Hancock County Commissioner Jeff Hunker with us this morning. Jeff, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate
it. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.
Among yesterday's election results, the Hancock County Board of Developmental Disabilities was able to pass their renewal levy. Nadine Weininger from the Board of Developmental Disabilities is with us in the studio this morning. You had that right. It's a it was a renewal, right?
Correct.
And,
yes.
And passed. So that was certainly good news. The other day in my mailbox, I received, as I'm sure many other people did, sort of a what I imagine is a Reader's Digest version of the 2024 annual report. I'm guessing no coincidence that that went out, that that mailer went out right before the election. And I'm sure that the full annual report is much more detailed. But there were some really interesting items here that I thought would be significant to highlight with respect to that. But I'll start with the levy. How critical was this? I mean, certainly, you know, thanks to the community for passing that. How critical is that to your operations?
Yes, I think I have to take this time to extend our appreciation to all of our voters who came out yesterday and casted their ballot towards us. You know, it shows a lot of trust and faith that they have in our agency and what we're doing. So we extend that appreciation out to all of them. But yes, we have two levies that go on. They're back to back. So we had one in 24. That one passed with 64%. Mm-hmm. And then this one passed yesterday with about 72%. Those two levies make up 75% of our revenue.
75%.
Correct.
And it's interesting, again, from the mailer, from the annual report, it is about a nearly $11 million budget in terms of revenue. It's about a $10 million in expenses, roughly $11 million in revenue. Most of that coming from the local voters.
Correct. Yes, 75%. And then we do have state and federal funding
as now, well. That brings up one of the issues that I wanted to touch on. Even though the vast majority of your funding does come locally, what about that state and federal portion of it? As we know, this has been a buzzword at both the state and the federal. We're in a budget year for the state. And the federal government has certainly been on this kick of reducing spending. We don't know that that means cuts necessarily. I haven't heard anything to that effect. But what would that mean if some of this funding was targeted for reduction?
So I do want to say, so current state and federal funding have not changed.
Yeah.
We have not been impacted as of today. I think it would be speculation to comment too much on that. But I will say that everything is proposed right now. Nothing has passed. Mm-hmm. Historically, state governors and federal government have been very good to DD boards. So we as a board have kind of come together and decided, you know, if and when or when these cuts or changes happen, we will address them when they arrive. But as of right now, nothing has happened.
Nothing has happened. But that, even though it represents a relatively small piece of the pie, that doesn't mean it would be insignificant.
Sure. I mean, we would definitely, it would be, if those proposed cuts were to happen and impact us, we would obviously have less revenue and we would just have to go back and look at our allocations.
And that brings us to one of the other things that's in the flyer. And I think it is important to talk about the continuum of services. When people think of the DD board, they probably think Blanchard Valley Center. That is certainly a big part of it, but it is so much more than that.
Yeah. So in that annual report, it includes this roadmap, which I think is a perfect visual explaining our birth through end of life services that we offer. Mm-hmm. So we have early intervention, we have SSA services, which is your case management that starts from 3 and goes through end of life. Mm-hmm. But we also offer fun things like Special Olympics. We have life engagement, which is all about, you know, it's rec. It's getting people out into the community, getting those social engagements happening, learning the social norms of the world. And we also have Project Life, which I know we've talked about before, which is a great program to get younger adults into the working force.
Mm-hmm. And I want to highlight some of those other programs, like the transition services, life engagement, advocacy. These are the things that happen for those that you serve after Blanchard Valley Center, after the school age in many cases, the quote-unquote school ages.
Sure. So transition age starts at 14, and this is something that we had identified as a significant gap in our services a handful of years ago. And so we've been hitting this hard. We are identifying that people, they need to go to work, mm-hmm. and they have skill sets to do that, or maybe they need a little help on identifying those skill sets to help them work. So that's been a huge area of growth for us, which kind of bleeds into that Project Life, which is 18 to 25. They work at these work rotations here at local businesses, and that just helps them get set up for life as well. Advocacy, that's been an ongoing thing. We have Action Club, which is an extension from Qantas. So that's service groups going out, volunteering, fundraising, giving money back into the community. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, with life engagement, that's 18 and older as well.
In addition to involving individuals with developmental disabilities into the workforce, integrating into the workforce, you also talk about independent living, or you have programs geared toward helping individuals transition to independent living. For a lot of individuals with developmental disabilities, they will be taken care of by family members, but eventually their parents will not be there and they will be, to a certain extent, on their own. This is also part of that transition.
Absolutely. So we focus on, I mean, the foundation of what we do is the least restrictive environment in all capacities, from school to living on their own. Mm-hmm. So we want people to live in the least restrictive environment as possible,
right.
But obviously that might not be the case for everyone. So someone might live in a group home, someone might live in a nursing home, someone might live in an apartment on their own, or maybe they have, you know, another tenant with them. But it's all about finding what's most appropriate for them.
We talk about this continuum of services. Like we said, when people think of DD in the community, they think Blanchard Valley Center, but it is so much more than just that. You also touched on the intervention cases and the number of intervention and case management when there are issues that come up involving
investigative.
Yes. This is something that I'm not sure if everyone understands. This falls to the Board of Developmental Disabilities, not to like Job and Family Services, that kind of thing, right?
So correct. So we are the agency that gets those concerns, complaints of neglect, abuse, exploitation, yeah. Whatever it may be. We get those calls. And anybody can report that. That's mm-hmm. not just because I'm a provider providing services to someone and yeah. I notice my coworker hit someone. Yeah. This is anybody. You see it at the store. You see somebody being abused that has a disability. You would call us.
Although you have mandatory reporters, do you?
Absolutely.
Not?
Yes. All of our yeah. staff are mandatory reporters, right. Just like, you know, police,
right.
Anyone
sure.
in human services. But yeah, we have staff on hand who investigate those concerns and allegations, and we work closely with like the police department, sheriff's department, you know, anybody who might be involved, including JFS,
Children's Services. Yes. That's what I was going to ask, that
oh, yes.
they are brought into the loop on this as well. So again, when you look at that budget, that $10 million budget, that covers an awful lot mm-hmm. Of services that go on kind of behind the scenes?
Sure, absolutely. I think a lot of what we do anymore is very much behind the scenes, because our role really is to coordinate the service, oversee the service, make sure it's happening to our standards, to state standards, and then we fund it.
Again, Nadine Weininger with us this morning from the Hancock County Board of Developmental Disabilities. You may have seen the mailer that went out last week on their 2024 annual report. Really interesting stuff there about all of the things that they do within the community for those vulnerable individuals, supporting the success and well-being of everyone in the community, and literally hundreds of people that you are supporting.
Correct. Over 900 annually.
Yeah. Again, Nadine Weininger, thanks very much for being with us this morning.
Absolutely.
We appreciate
it.
We have a link on our webpage, by the way, for more information if you want to check that out at goodmornings.net.
Information that makes a difference. Good Mornings with Chris Oaks on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. This from Summit County, Ohio, the Akron area, where a traffic stop turned into an animal version of Breaking Bad when a raccoon holding a meth pipe was spotted in the car. You heard that right. A raccoon holding a meth pipe in the car. According to police there in Summit County, a woman by the name of Victoria Vidal was pulled over due to an active warrant. She was also driving on a suspended license. After she was detained, the officer who conducted the stop returned to the vehicle to find the aforementioned raccoon sitting in the driver's seat, seemingly taking a hit from a meth pipe that it had clasped in its little claws. Right then. Upon further investigation, the story goes on to say, it was discovered that the raccoon was Ms. Vidal's pet, which she had properly documented. The raccoon goes by the name Chewy, incidentally. So no problem with the raccoon itself. But the while the mystery of the raccoon's origin was solved, there was still the matter of the meth pipe, which led to the discovery of a bulk amount of methamphetamine and crack cocaine in Ms. Vidal's vehicle. She now faces various drug charges. According to a statement from the Springfield Township Police Department there in Summit County, quote, while our officers are trained to expect the unexpected, finding a raccoon holding a meth pipe is a first. Well, I would hope so. I would hope that that would be something that you had not encountered before. Because, I mean, if this is a routine thing, I think we need to do a little deeper investigation. That's all kinds of weird. Elsewhere in the broken news, speaking of animals and law enforcement authorities, if you have lost a kangaroo, you might want to contact authorities in Osceola County, Florida. That's right. The kangaroo was found Monday hopping down a road in St. Cloud. It was not something you see every day in Florida. They figure it belongs to somebody. It's somebody's pet or something because, I mean, you know, kangaroos are not native to Florida, and it didn't, you know, wander off and get lost from its natural habitat in Australia, end up in Florida. Kangaroo was found Monday hopping down a road in St. Cloud. It was captured and taken to a facility that the Fish and Wildlife Service says is properly equipped to care for the kangaroo. The agency says it appears to be in good health, and now they are searching for the owner of said kangaroo. So if your kangaroo is missing, Osceola County, Florida, authorities have located your kangaroo. How do you put that notice out to the public? Have you lost your kangaroo? We may have located it. Let's see. Another animal-related story. This from South Bend, Indiana, where police have arrested two men for trying to break into the Pottawatomie Zoo. Two men trying to break into the zoo. They were spotted by security and then confronted by police. Initially, the men claimed that they were there to let a dog out. Who let the dogs out? They said they were there to let a dog out. And eventually, one of them admitted to cutting the fence to walk around inside the zoo. Both men insisted that they did not enter the zoo, however. Breaking into a zoo. That's weird. All the places that you could break into. Dateline Stafford County, Virginia. The local sheriff's office trying to track down a man who tried to reclaim a bag of cocaine that he left behind at a local business. Investigators say the drugs were found at a Mannheim auto auction location on Monday morning. The suspect then showed up a short time later and allegedly told staff members he was looking for his bag of coke. Now, I have to admit, I have gone back to a business where I think I might have forgotten something, maybe my phone, or, you know, did I lose my wallet here? Did I drop my wallet or whatever? But going back to a business, say, excuse me, did you happen to see a bag of cocaine around here? Something like, I think I lost my bag of coke. That's bold. That's bold. The man who is not identified left the business after being told that the sheriff's office would be notified. Deputies invited the suspect to stop by their station so they could have a bit of a conversation. There's no word on whether he's actually shown up the sheriff's office for a conversation with deputies. Excuse me, did you happen to find my bag of coke? I seem to have left it someplace, and I think I might have dropped it here. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is your viral challenge of the day. Another internet challenge that people are, apparently kids, are starting to latch on to. Another dangerous challenge. Public schools around the country are warning of a new online trend involving kids setting their laptops on fire. Now, to be fair, there have been times when I have wanted to set my computer on fire. So I understand the sentiment here. But apparently in this online trend, the students apparently taking part in a TikTok challenge where they short out their laptops by puncturing the lithium-ion battery. This can be extremely dangerous. Extremely dangerous. Don't do this. Where did they come up with this idea? These ideas? I don't know. I guess when we were kids, we did stupid things too. But this is monumentally stupid. Parents and guardians are being asked to speak to their children and discourage them from participating in this kind of activity. That could be the understatement of the year. Discourage them from participating in this kind of activity. You're going to kill yourself! Don't do that! But that's the latest. There you go. That is today's broken news. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Research consistently finds that rates of gambling addiction among veterans and active duty personnel are significantly higher than the general population. Veterans may qualify for gambling addiction services through the Veterans Administration. Visit our local Veterans Service Office website at HancockVeterans.com or call the Ohio Problem Gambling Helpline at 1-800-589-9966. This message is brought to you by the Hancock County Community Partnership.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Mother's Day is Sunday. And while a lot of folks would be calling or seeing their mother for Mother's Day, it seems that during the rest of the year, we are not giving mom the attention she deserves. In a new Talker research survey of 2,000 adults, 22% of people admit that they don't call their mom enough. The average person only talks to mom about once a week. Although, on a positive note, 78% of those surveyed say that they can't make it a week without a chat with their mother. When they do call, 28% say making mom laugh is their number one priority to make them feel close to mom. 25% say they love to have heartfelt conversations. 11% say they feel closest to mom when they can unwind together. And it's pretty apparent the folks have a lot to make up for on Mother's Day. The survey finds the average person shows their appreciation for mom less than twice a month. When they do, the most common ways to show that love for mom is by spending time with them. That's the number one thing we can do. Followed by sharing loving words. The top ways to show mom how much we care. In the survey, 2 out of 3 Americans claim to know their mother better than anyone else in her life. 68% say, I know mom better than anyone else in her life. But did you know this? Nearly a third of moms admit that they feel like their loved ones don't appreciate them enough. 30% say their loved ones don't appreciate them. So you may think you know your mom, but did you know that about your mom? Something to think about as Mother's Day approaches. So happening around town, the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame golf outing is coming up here in just a few weeks. John Marshall is with us in the studio. Tell us more about it.
Well,
Hancock Sports Hall of Fame golf outing.
The golf outing, you kind of have to start with the Hall of Fame itself.
Right.
Going back to the early 1980s, Dave Egbert, who was a sports writer at the Courier, he got fired up about the idea and got everybody involved.
I remember talking about this, I think, last year or the year before, when we were talking about the latest inductees, and the concern when the whole project started was, will we have enough people to kind of keep this going? Yeah, it was really easy to have an inaugural class, and maybe the first few years you can name some people off the top of your head. But as it turns out, that has not been a problem. We are really blessed here locally to have so many terrific athletes and inspiring stories. It's not just the athletes, but the stories in many cases behind their accomplishments that are really tremendous.
Right. Nearly 250 inductees in 39 classes since 1985. And now the Hall of Fame, you can see the plaques and some of the memorabilia out at Tony's on 224 on the west side of town. That's great. It's nice to be able to go and see that. But there are a lot of other parts that go along with it. Each spring we have an induction ceremony. Five, six, seven members are inducted. This past year it was Aaron Kraft and Kate Kraft from Liberty Benton and Ohio State in basketball. Larry Young, who was a football player and at Corey Rawson and a longtime coach around the state in both football and track. Roger Renz, who was the basketball coach at Findlay High School until his death. Amy Rodeheffer-Guerre, who was the very good soccer player at Findlay High School for the Trojan Girls. And Travis Clark, who was both a wrestler and a football player at Macomb and has gone on to coach and do all sorts of things. That is the induction class. Then there's a team most years, the 78, 79, and 79, 80 Van Loo girls basketball team who beat Findlay during those couple of years.
So again, that's what I'm talking about. Those stories are just incredible.
Yeah.
You think Van Loo knocking off Findlay.
Yep.
I mean, and there is there is a point. I mean, obviously, you want to recognize these people, but one of the points to me, anyway, is to help inspire this next generation. You bring back and remember these stories because, you know, absent the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame, how many people would remember that story, for example?
Right. And so that is what we're all about, recognizing those who have gone along and done fantastic things. And it's not just football, basketball, baseball, track, soccer, that kind of thing. There are folks who drove sulkies and lots of horses. And they're one of the members is Ray Haroon, who was the first Indianapolis 500 winner who right. lived in Findlay for a while.
Yeah, a good point. It's not all necessarily like high school athletes. I know there are quite a few who had tremendous accomplishments during their high school years mm-hmm. here locally, but there are obviously college athletes and even professional sports figures that trace their roots here to Findlay.
Right, and so to be able to recognize those folks, we have to have a way to fund the induction ceremony and all that goes on the website and everything. That being the case, we have one fundraiser each year, and it's the golf outing at the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, it should be some sort of sports-related event.
And that goes back to 2016. Al Baker, who was a member of the Hall of Fame and was a longtime golf coach at the University of Findlay, both men's and women's, and was a basketball coach for the university as well as mm-hmm. There at Arcadia. He said, hey, this is a great opportunity for us to meld these two things together.
Sure.
And so since 2016, it started out, I believe the first one was at Arlington. They did it a couple of years there. It was a Red Hawk for a while. Now it's at Hillcrest, and it has been for the last several years. We have a great time out there, and you've got an opportunity to help make sure that we continue to be able to recognize some of these great athletes who and administrators and people who make the athletics happen.
Good point. It's not even necessarily all the athletes, some of the people behind the scenes, administrators and so on, mm-hmm. That are part of this as well. So give us all of the details on this year's golf outing. It is coming up in June, is that right?
Friday, June 27th at okay. Hillcrest. Register or check-in starts at 8 o'clock. Everything is a shotgun start there at 9 o'clock. And we'll just have a great time. We're hoping for good weather, and we've gotten pretty lucky over the years. And so we're hoping that this rain is getting itself
out of the way now. Yeah. Right. So how do folks sign up? Because registration is open now.
Right. HancockHOF.com mm-hmm. is where you can get signed up, or if you know any of the members of the board, you're certainly welcome to check in with them. There are also forms around town at a bunch of the businesses. I dropped some off there at Swanson Barbershop. So, you know, if nothing else, just pop in there and just pick one up. And not only do we have a great time with $75 per person or $300 per
Yeah, I was going to say, you can register a team or you can register as an individual and be placed on a team.
Yep. So. And so that $75 for 18 holes of golf with cart and lunch afterwards mm-hmm. and the opportunity to win door prizes and all those sorts of things. But we have to have sponsors as well who sponsor a hole or give us goodies to go in the goodie bags or the door prizes. All of that information, again, at HancockHOF.com, and it's just a wonderful opportunity that we get to put this together, have a lot of fun, and also keep the Hall of Fame going.
Yeah, I was going to mention, if you are not a golfer, you can still get involved because you need sponsorship opportunities, and as you mentioned, you've got door prizes to give away. If someone mm-hmm. wants to get involved that way...
That's also at the website, HancockHOF.com.
Okay, very good. And the date, once again, is?
June 27th. That's a Friday.
June 27th. Okay.
Register the sooner the better.
Yeah, obviously, because there are only we can organize, so many spots. We have the link to the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame website at our webpage at goodmornings.net. And as we always say, it's not really about the golf.
It's just get together and have fun. My team has come in last for each of the last 3 years.
Say it is not always about the golf. It is not necessarily about the golf. Is it a scramble?
It is. Four person scramble.
Say so anybody can do
that. Yeah, piece of cake.
Anybody can do that. Again, goodmornings.net to learn more. John Marshall, the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame golf outing with us this morning. John, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate the help.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Our thanks to all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net, our little corner of the World Wide Web. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.